of snow on the grounds, leftovers from the skiff of the other night. "Are you all right, Walter?" I thought about whether I wanted to share my symptoms with him, but then figured he was the only one who was medically trained that I really trusted. I've been having these phases.
What kind of phases?
I'm not really sure, but it's like some traumatic pause.
Physically or mentally?
Both. He studied me, and then his eyes went toward the trees by the creek.
You are familiar with the fight-or-flight response?
I nodded. Survival-oriented acute stress response.
Yes, but have you ever heard of the fight-flight-or-freeze response?
No.
You access the menace as something you can defeat, or one that you must run from.
Both of these responses require a burst of biochemical, such as adrenaline, that enable you to combat or flee your adversary. But what if in those nanoseconds of response time, you realize that you can neither defeat nor escape the menace? He finally looked back at me.
Are these phases happening in moments of stress?
No.
Interesting.
Are you alone?
Mostly.
How long are these periods? Vic timed one at almost 8 minutes.
It is possible that your mind is disassociating itself from the terrifying enormity of what you are facing because accepting it might rob you of your sanity.
I looked at the concentration camp survivor. I'm getting tired of it all, Doc. I'm getting sick of what people do to one another.
This is the first time you've felt this way?
No, but it's gotten to me worse than it ever has before. He nodded.
You've been through a great deal lately.
Maybe it's enough. He stared at me through the thick-framed glasses as I spoke to the surface of the table. Maybe it's time to have it over with. Just up and quit.
That would be a shame.
Why? He adjusted the glasses and smiled the sad smile that had aged like wine.
Because you are very good at what you do, Walter.
Isaac reached under his down jacket and put a small plastic bag from the front pocket of his smock. He handed it to me. I held the bag up but couldn't see anything inside.
Mule hairs.
I sighed, thinking about how high the man had been hung. I held the bag up in the sun and could now see the short fibers and then lowered it to the table and studied the wood grain of the surface.
So, what is it I'm so damn terrified of, Doc?
Why, Walter, I would have thought it was obvious. He smiled his sad, worldly smile.
Yourself.
Chapter 7.
Even though Chuck Kuhn is fur-bearing, I still don't think we're going to be able to have a hunting season on him. Vic cocked her head at the game warden.
He's retiring. That means he's old and slow and will be easier to shoot.
I don't think the department will go for it. She crossed her legs.
Then I guess I may have to resort to the shoot, shovel, and shut the hell up plan.
I glanced at the 20-inch brown trout on the wall above Ferris Kaplan's desk, adjusted my hat on my knee, and changed the subject.
What do you know about this Kasich Chichu?
He laughed.
The wolf advocate. She's a major pain in my ass, but that's not an official department position either.
She was quoting me some interesting findings on 777M earlier today.
Like what?
That he's a native Wyoming wolf and not one of the Canadian transplants you guys brought down here in the 90s.
First off, we didn't bring them down here. The Forest Service did. And second, I haven't heard anything about that.
I spread my palms as he studied me and looked thoughtful, finally shaking his head.
Irromotus. That would be highly unlikely.
How big of a deal would it be?
Huge. Like finding an extinct species, or the Loch Ness Monster, or Bigfoot.
Vic slumped in her chair.
So we get to be the ringmaster of an even bigger shit show than the one we have now.
Possibly. Ferris leaned down and opened a desk drawer.
Want a drink?
Not waiting for a response, he placed a bottle of Sazerac rye on his blotter, along with two tumblers.
You guys are going to have to share.
Vic reached for the glass as he finished pouring. Okay, so this wolf is collared, right? So why can't you guys just track him and dart him, or whatever you do?
Kevin took a sip from his personal glass and leaned back in his chair. Well, that supposes that the smart collar is operating.
I reached over and took the tumbler from Vic as she lowered it from her lips.
I take it it's not.
Sometimes. The new collars are developed by a team of scientists at UC Santa Cruz with accelerometers like those of smartphones.
He paused and glanced at Vic.
Will you explain what a smartphone is to him?
She turned to me. It's a phone that's smart.
The game warden sighed. Anyway, they not only track the wolf but give us an indication of when they're burning up calories by running or conserving energy while resting, almost like keeping a diary of the wolf's activities.
Sounds great, so what's the problem?
That batch got the first-generation leftovers, and they proved to be a little finicky. Sometimes they transmit, sometimes they don't.
The teacher woman also mentioned that a trainee was the one who tested and collared 777M.
That could have also had an effect.
Vic took the glass back from me.
Does it have GPS tracking?
Sometimes. I leaned forward. And is it true that private individuals can get transponders and track the wolves themselves? He nodded.
If the transmitter on the collar is working, yes. I've heard of cases over near Yellowstone, and that could be true with 777M.
Hey, what the hell is this 777M shit anyway? It sounds like we're talking about a U-boat. Can we just name this fucking wolf?
Kaplan shook his head and placed a hand over his bearded face.
Oh, please don't do that.
Why not?
It'll anthropomorphize the animal, and pretty soon we've got GoFundMe sites, Facebook pages, Twitter accounts, and Instagram pictures.
And what's wrong with that?
He glanced at me and then back to her.
Because somebody's going to shoot that wolf, and it always has a negative effect when people start looking at large predators as Fluffy the dog next door.
Vic made a face.
So somebody's going to shoot him?
Most assuredly.
Because he might have killed a sheep?
Which, by the way, was not confirmed by your own lab's DNA testing.
He raised his hands in surrender.
Yes.
Not because he nibbled on the shepherd?
Ferris took a sip and then rested the tumbler on his blotter. Surprisingly, in the eyes of the federal and state government, that's less of an issue.
Well, in the eyes of the denizens of Absaroka County, it's not.
I took the glass back from my undersheriff.
Evidently, there are hordes of wolves preparing to descend out of the Bighorn Mountains and run rampant through the streets of Durant.
He shook his head.
Have these people ever checked the statistics to see what the odds are of a wolf attack on human beings?
Somehow I doubt it.
In modern history, in the contiguous United States, we've had 2 deaths by wolves, and in both cases, the animals were habituated to the point of not being afraid of people. Wolves generally know better than to associate with human beings in that it's always going to end badly for the wolf. It's a case of humans perpetuating a campaign of selective breeding. Over the centuries, bold wolves are killed and the more timid animals survive.
So, if you even see one in the wild, it's quite an accomplishment.
Vic took the glass back and finished it off with one slug.
How about Larry?
Captain looked at her, then me, then her again.
Excuse me?
The wolf. How about we call him Larry?
Carrying the sawed-off shotgun through the Durant home for assisted living didn't raise much of a response from the staff. Lucian Connolly had had visitors bearing firearms before. Stopping at his door, I reached down, ruffled the hair behind dog's ears, and looked at Vic.
Why Larry?
KYW back in Philadelphia used to have this chiller theater show on Saturday nights, and as a kid I was an avid viewer.
I looked at her, taking in her open flannel shirt and tight thermal she wore underneath just to distract the old sheriff.
Okay.
My Nana used to stay up with me, and we'd watch the movies and sleep on the sofa. I don't think she ever made it through a single one, but I felt better having her there.
She reached down and petted dog's enormous head.
They would show a triple creature feature. You know, 3 Frankenstein movies? Or 3 Dracula movies? But my favorites were the Wolfman movies with Lon Chaney Jr. And his character was named Larry Talbot.
I knocked on the door. There are times when I think I barely know you.
There are times you're right.
She reached up and pounded.
You home, you old pervert?
I glanced up and down the hallway in hopes that Lucian was the only one to receive the greeting.
After a moment, the door opened and he stood there, in a freshly ironed shirt, clean blue jeans, and polished Paul Bond boots, his silver hair combed and parted. I told him Vic was accompanying me this evening.
Entree, entree!
He stepped back and ushered us in with a sweep of his arm. Dog shot into the room and jumped onto his favorite leather sofa. The place was spotless, and some sort of fragrant burbling was coming from a pot on the stove. I sat the shotgun by my usual chair.
I'm sorry, we were looking for the apartment of Lucian Connolly.
He ignored me and continued into the kitchen on his four-pronged cane.
Get in here and shut the damn door.
He stirred the ingredients as we slipped off our jackets and piled them beside Dog, who was already stretched out, his head on his paws.
What's for dinner? I had a friend drop off some elk tenderloin, and I used it to make what I consider to be one of the finest stews I've ever created.
Looking over the chessboard, I could see the old sheriff had left it the same as it was last week when I'd been here, and I was worried that none of his other players had paid him a visit. Is that last week's game?
He came in from the kitchen holding a bottle of Clos de l'Étoile de Pape and an opener, which he handed off to Vic. He only drank wine when she accompanied me.
It is.
No other games this week?
Nope.
How come?
All my opponents are either dead or too senile to play anymore.
So you're stuck with me? Vic expertly pulled the cork on the red and handed the bottle back to him. She wandered toward the sliding glass doors and stretched her arms upward.
And me?
He allowed his eyes to linger on her, and I couldn't blame him.
All three of you.
He petted Dog and tottered back into the kitchen to collect the wine glasses and, returning, handed them out to me.
So what are you going to do about this wolf situation you got in your hands?
I extended a glass, he poured, and then I handed it off to Vic.
There is no wolf situation. That ain't what's in the papers.
He glugged another for me, a technique that would have appalled the vintners.
What came over you, giving out with statements like that?
I was misquoted. Pouring one for himself, he raised a glass.
Here's to the Fourth Estate.
After the three of us touched glasses, he looked thoughtful.
What the hell are the other three estates, anyway?
Edmund Burke, 1787, referring to the three estates of the realm in the European sense, the clergy, nobility, and commoners, but in the American sense, the legislative, executive, and judiciary branches, ceding power to the fourth, the press. Lucian shook his head.
Drink up! Maybe we'll get some sense out of you before it's all over.
His eyes lingered on Vic again.
How the hell do you put up with him?
She sipped her wine and sat on the sofa beside Dog. It's going to get worse. He's got a computer now. The old sheriff turned to look at me, appalled.
The hell you say?
I nodded.
I haven't figured out how to turn it on, but when I do, I'm going to be hell on wheels. Saints preserve us.
Anxious to change the subject, I remembered it being my turn and hooked in a knight from the left.
So did you ever have any wolf problems back in the day?
He studied my move and sipped his wine.
Define the term problem.
You know what I mean.
Did I ever have a wolf problem?
His eyes came back up, but paused when he noticed the weapon leaning beside his guest chair.
Why, have these games become so competitive that you have to come armed these days?
Reaching down, I picked up the old shotgun and tabled it in my outstretched hands, presenting it to him.
You remember this weapon?
He studied it up and down as Vic stood nearby with a smile playing on her lips.
Can't say that I do.
It's the one that cost you your leg. He stared at it.
You're shitting me.
He took it, and I watched as he swung it up and stared at it almost as closely as if I'd handed him the leg they'd cut off all those years ago.
I'll be damned.
Look familiar now? He shook his head, unbelieving.
Well, I only saw it for a few seconds back in the day, and by then it was far too late.
He studied it some more.
I thought it was a 12-gauge.
20. He nodded.
By God, that night it took off my leg, it looked like a bazooka.
He studied it a bit more and then raised his dark eyes to look at me.
Remington Model 11, Widowmaker, the Dillinger gun. This little booger was easier to saw off and made it the go-to weapon for motorized bandits back in the dirty 30s. Along with those new N-block V8 engines, those old boys were hard to run down. Hell, this gun alone is probably responsible for the National Firearms Act of 34. No silencers, machine guns, or anything sawed off.
He studied the thing, running his hands over the metal.
You sure this is the one?
Pretty sure.
Where'd you get it?
Abirani Etupare. Found it under one of the lambing sheds on his father's summer place. He says it was in pretty bad shape and probably had been lying under there since the act. Lucian raised the shotgun and sighted it on the mule deer mount on his wall, just above my head. And I could see how a man could be intimidated by it.
I'll be damned.
He also said something else interesting about who it was that actually shot you. He said to give that to you and see if the statuary limits had run out yet. The old sheriff lowered the weapon but continued looking at it.
Beltran was the older of the two, bigger and tougher than his little brother.
He sipped his wine.
It took me a couple of weeks to get out of that damn hospital, but when I did, I went looking for him. When I caught up with him, it was down in the Middle Fork on the Powder River near the Outlaw Cave. They didn't know what county they was in, and I ain't so sure I did either.
They had a sheep camp and a little dugout no bigger than a walk-in closet. He reached out and stroked the pebbly finish of the shotgun astride his knees.
They'd been down there hiding out for a month.
He shook his head.
Now just imagine how tough you had to be out there living in a hole in the ground.
Vic held out an empty glass to him, and he picked up the bottle to refill her before setting it at the edge of the table.
They knew I was coming, but they didn't have a weapon between them. Beltran come out empty-handed, and if there's ever been a man I faced that was certain he was going to die, it was him.
His eyes fell to the board and tightened, attempting to seize those fleeting moments when just one mistake might mean the end of your life.
I had my .38 out and pointed at him as he stood there between the doorway of that old dugout and me and said he understood if I wanted his life for what they'd done, but that if I could see fit to just blow off an arm or leg and leave his head attached, he sure would appreciate it.
Vic laughed. Lucian cocked his head and smiled.
Honest to God, that's what he said.
Then what?
I asked him where his brother was, and I told him I wasn't going to ask twice, and that's when Jake's come out of the dugout, also empty-handed.
I sipped my wine and waited.
I told Beltran to step aside, but he didn't. He just stood there between me and his brother, who had those spooky blue eyes, starts telling me that one of the last things he promised his mother was that he'd take care of his little brother, and he didn't see any way out of it now. He said, you know how it is down there in Rawlins, Lucian. They'll eat him up and spit out a half man if he survives. And he was right. That was back in the day when that place was rough, brother. So anyway, he says, why don't you just send me down there, or whatever's left of me, when you get done, and we'll call it even.
We waited for a long while as he seemed lost in his thoughts. And finally, Vic stood and went into the kitchen to stir the stew as a relief from the tension or to provide even the smallest bit of privacy, as Lucian looked out the windows at the darkness.
Think about that. Giving up years of your life for somebody else.
Vic came back out and stood there, leaning against the wall with a ladle in her hands. You let him take his brother's place? He glanced back at her.
Once.
She studied him. Excuse me? His eyes came back to mine.
Had a wolf problem once out on Cat Creek. They just started putting collars on those things. And if you shot one, you might as well have shot Spiro Agnew. They had a specialist who said they had a wolf out of the park, but that something must be wrong because their telemetry said that wolf was headed across South Dakota. And the last they heard, it was just outside Chicago. So we call it in, and these Chicago PD boys head out to the last given location on a wolf hunt, and boy, I'd have paid money to witness that.
What happened? He glanced back down at the shotgun. They found a dead wolf in a coal hopper, where somebody had dumped it off an overpass. Why do you suppose he didn't want it? I glanced at the Remington Model 11 sitting on the floorboards.
I don't know. Maybe it reminded him of things he didn't particularly want to remember.
Why don't you come in? I pulled the bullet to a stop in front of the little craftsman house with the red door and Kisling.
I can't.
Dog and I need to go home every once in a while just to make sure the wildlife hasn't taken up residency. Like Larry? I said nothing, but she smiled. How about I go with you? I don't think I'm going to be that much fun. She studied me. You're sure you're all right?
I think so. I took a deep breath and sighed. Just listening to Lucian got to me a little bit. Guess I see him over there at the home for assisted living, and I can't help but think that that's where I'm going to end up. She reached back to pet my companion.
Never. You've got dog and me.
I smiled. Lucian likes being alone, Walt. He always has. I swear he likes company once a week when that granddaughter of his brings over a box of pastries, and that's it. You're not like that. And more important, you have too many people who care about you. So if you're worried about being alone in your old age, I'd forget about it.
They'd have to put a revolving door over at the home for assisted living.
She reached across and placed a hand under my chin, putting it toward her and gently kissing me.
There. Now go home and go to bed.
Watching her get out and walk up to her tiny house, I made sure she was at the door before lowering the window so she could look back at me.
What?
I'm making sure Larry isn't here to attack you. She curtsied with the container of stew. Driving out of town to the rhythm of blinking caution lights, I couldn't help but think about my daughter and granddaughter so many miles away. I crossed under the overpass to I-25 and pulled into the Maverick gas station. As I filled my tank, I looked up at the moonlight reflecting off the mountains. I missed my daughter, but I really missed my granddaughter. The last time I'd seen her, Henry had come down from the res for a reunion with Katie. When the two of them fell into a lengthy conversation, Laura and I went out for an abbreviated walk with partial carry. It was sunset, and we watched as the Bighorn Mountains turned a raging violet and then a more somber purple before darkening into blackened cutouts. I pointed. Mountains.
Mountains.
She reached for them, excited.
My mountains.
Yep. Your mountains. At the pump, I glanced back at the overpass and the inviting on-ramp that led south. I could just hop on the highway and be in Cheyenne in 5 hours. But I hadn't received any response from my first and only email, so... Hanging up the handle, I looked across the parking lot and could see an animated conversation going on inside the Maverick convenience store. A powerful-looking man in hiking pants and a fleece jacket appeared to be arguing with the attendant. I held a finger up to Dog and started across the lot, hoping that I could draw this confrontation to a quick close and get back on my way. When I pushed the door open, the man was leaning on the counter and yelling at the attendant in the de rigueur red vest, but he pulled back and stopped at the electronic tone that announced my entrance. I waited for him to turn around and look at me from under the brim of a North Face cap. What the hell do you want? I glanced at the employee behind the counter. Is there a problem? The customer stepped closer, and I noted he was smaller than me, but not by much, and looked to be in remarkable shape. I asked you what the hell you wanted. Well, first of all, I'd appreciate it if you'd lower your voice and change your tone. He leaned toward me. You got some kind of problem? That's what I'm trying to find out. Stepping to the side, I addressed the clerk again. Is there something going on here? He seemed relieved that I was there.
His credit card didn't work, so he came in here, but I tried it, and it still didn't go through.
The man pointed at the card machine, the jacket's horsehair zipper pull swaying with the effort.
There's nothing wrong with that card. Run it again. I've tried it 4 times. Do you have another one?
He threw his hands in the air.
Look, pal, I don't know who you are, but I know people around here, and the local sheriff is a family friend.
I stood there for a moment, letting that one settle.
Is that so?
Yeah.
So if you don't want any trouble, you should just lay off.
Really?
He stepped forward, thrusting his face in mine. What, are you hard of hearing?
Carefully opening my jacket, I pulled my badge wallet from my pocket and flipped it open, displaying the 6-point star for him. I'm a pretty good friend of the sheriff myself. The color kind of drained from his face as I put the hardware away and hiked my jacket back to incidentally reveal my Colt.
How about you show me some ID so that we can all get acquainted?
He glanced around, licking his lips, and then pointed at a black 4-door Jeep Wrangler
with Colorado plates out by the pumps on the opposite side from mine. It's in my wallet out on the dash of my car. Reaching over and taking his credit card from the attendant, I handed it back and gestured toward the lot. Well, let's go take a look. Following him out to the vehicle, he began backpedaling a bit. So you're a deputy here in Absaroka County? Evidently he hadn't read the ID card that accompanied my badge very carefully. Something like that. Reaching the door, I watched as he took the wallet and pulled out his Colorado driver's license, handing it to me. Well, I do know the sheriff. I mean, he knows my family. I read aloud. Donald Lott? That's not the family name. The family here in Absaroka County, that is. I looked up at him. Echipari would be the family name here in county. And Abarane Echipari would be your father-in-law? He looked surprised and a little confused. Yeah. But how do you know? We sipped our styrofoam cups of coffee as his tank filled, courtesy of the Absaroka County Sheriff's Department Fleet Credit Card. He was embarrassed and not wanting to talk, but that was too bad because I did. I spoke with your wife, Jeannie, and she said you weren't driving up until this coming weekend. He watched the numbers go by as the tank filled. Anything better than making eye contact with me? I had a change in schedule. And what is it you do, Mr. Lott? IT for Western Banking and Trust down in Denver? I nodded, proud of having just learned the term. I can see why you aren't too excited about the sheep business. For the first time he smiled, placing an expensive-looking hiking boot onto the concrete of the pump island. Abe told you that? He said you and his daughter were less than excited about the prospect. The pump stopped, he hung up the handle, and turned to look in my general direction. You ever work sheep? I leaned on the fender of his car and shook my head. Nope. My family were cattle people. But I think the romance is about the same after you've done it for a couple thousand head. He turned and laughed. I'm from Mississippi. I didn't know anything about sheep, but I was trying to impress Jeannie. If I never see another sheep again in my life, it'll be too soon. Sounds like your wife pretty much feels the same way. Maybe worse. How about your son? He froze up a bit, but then peeled the top from the cup of coffee I'd fronted him and took a sip. Oh, he thinks it's a grand adventure every time he comes up here. He and your father-in-law seem close. He nodded, keeping his nose in the cup. They are. Maybe a little too close. Meaning? He sipped the coffee some more and then turned to look at me. Look, Sheriff, I don't know how much you know about what's going on here. I lowered my own cup and studied him back. Enough to know that you tried to hire a good friend of mine or me to kidnap your son. He expulsed a lungful of air and acted as if I'd hit him. Now, wait a minute. It wasn't anything like that. Then what was it like? Look, I just wanted my son back. I didn't want it to turn into a big legal hassle, so I was talking to Libby Troon down in Cheyenne, and she said that she knew people up here that... And if you don't mind my asking, how do you know, Libby? My bank sometimes finds itself in situations when we need a bail bondsman, and in cases that concern Wyoming, it's often best to have one from in-state, and Liberty Bail Bonds fits the bill. Anyway, I was just venting to her, and she came up with the idea. Libby did? Yeah, but I don't want to get her into trouble or anything. She was just trying to help me. Why didn't you simply contact my office? He dipped a shoulder in a modified shrug. Jeannie said her family had a history with the sheriff's department up here and that it might not be for the best. She also mentioned that you might have had some run-ins with the law. She said that? He paused for a moment. Just some stupid stuff from back when I was a kid. Good grief. But then you were going to try and hire me to kidnap your child? He shook his head. I didn't know it was you. For goodness sake, if I was going to hire somebody for an illegal kidnapping, I wouldn't hire the local sheriff. Tell me, is Libby Troon some kind of moron or what? She can be... I considered my word choice carefully. Eccentric. I just wanted to get my son back. You can understand that. I suppose so, but you can't go around kidnapping people and transporting them across state lines, even family. The law has some strong feeling about that kind of thing. I know. Look, I apologize. It's just that I found myself in a difficult situation and was trying to find some way of solving the problem and made a few bad choices.
Okay. He stood there for a moment more.
You were out there at the ranch? About the dead shepherd?
Yep.
That's horrible.
Did you know him?
I may have met him once, but I don't remember. Sometimes I ride along with the camp tender, Jimenez. I know him, but the others, what with the turnover rate and the few times I saw any of them, are just a blur.
Any idea why he might have killed himself, or somebody might have killed him?
You serious?
He stared at me.
Somebody killed him? You mean actually killed him?
It's a potential, and we're duty-bound to investigate all possibilities.
The murder thing, I have no idea, but you said maybe suicide?
Yep. He crossed one muscled arm, hugging himself, and looked around, saying the next words carefully.
Well, Abe is kind of hard on those guys sometimes.
How hard?
Look, Sheriff, I don't know how much of this I should be talking about.
You don't have to talk about any of it.
He sipped the coffee. He beat on one of the shepherds one time while I was there. Practically beat him to death.
Miguel Hernandez?
No, this was years ago. I mean, he smacked the guy until he was trying to hide under the wagon and then went around kicking at him. I'd never seen anything like that in my life.
I sipped the last of my coffee and then tossed the cup in the trash can.
I suppose that has something to do with your concerns about your son?
Oh, I don't think Abe would ever hurt Liam.
It's just, he's got a temper. Comes from a line of tempers, and that's just not something I'm acquainted with, if you know what I mean.
Western Banking and Trust doesn't have a bare-knuckle Friday?
No, not that it might not be a good idea.
He sighed and then tossed the remains of his own cup into the trash. Will you excuse me for just a moment?
Sure.
I watched as he crossed the parking lot to re-enter the Maverick and speak with the clerk at length, and then I watched as the two of them left. They then shook hands, and he returned to where I stood.
Sorry, just something I needed to do.
No problem.
I watched as he climbed in the Jeep and fired it up.
You still owe the Absaroka County Sheriff's Department $43.42.
Oh, shit.
He started fumbling for his wallet on the dashboard.
I can write you a check?
I waved him off. Just drop it at my office sometime. I'll be interested in how the meeting with your father-in-law goes. I glanced around.
It's getting kind of late. I'm thinking you should maybe grab a motel room rather than drive all the way out there tonight.
He nodded.
I agree.
Do you need a loan?
A broke banker. Pretty ridiculous, huh?
He flushed a little.
I think I've got enough cash if I don't need to pay you back tonight.
That's fine.
He extended a hand. Sheriff, please don't judge me too harshly for my behavior this evening. I'm a little upset about my son, and sometimes the pressure of all of it just gets to me. Please accept my apology.
I shook the hand.
Certainly.
He took a last look at me and then pulled the Wrangler into gear.
I just want to see my child, you know?
With that, he pulled out, making a U-turn and waving at the convenience store attendant, and then wheeling across the street to the Best Western as I started for my truck and dog, my eyes drifting back to the pool of light that illuminated the southbound ramp of I-25.
Yep, I do.
Chapter 8. It says I have a message. Ruby's voice trailed in from the outside office.
Well, then answer it.
How do I find it?
It should be right there on the left.
I studied the screen.
What left?
She appeared in my doorway.
It is in no way helpful for me to have to come in here and assist you in the simplest tasks.
Crossing my office, she turned and looked at the computer.
You don't have a screensaver?
That's going to be my next email.
She pointed. See that little icon down there on the bottom?
Which icon?
The one that looks like a stamp.
Grabbing the thingamajig, she moved it, and a little arrow magically appeared.
You just left-click it, and it'll open your emails.
Left-click?
The mouse. You left-click the mouse, and it opens your email.
What if I right-click?
Don't.
Okay.
Any more questions?
Why do they call her a mouse? She left without answering, and I moved the thingamajig as she'd instructed, very careful, to left-click. An entirely new screen appeared, and I could see an abbreviated version of my email response boxed in the left-hand corner. I shouted to the outer office, "It worked!" Ruby's voice came back in response, "We're all so proud of you, Walter." "What now?" "Left-click the email you want." Right. I did as she said, and the thing grew to encompass the screen so I could now read my daughter's four-word response. "I love you, too." It worked again. "Hallelujah!" "What now?" There was a moment, and then Ruby appeared in my door, like the magic arrow, making a beeline for my seat, and then grabbing the thingamajig and manipulating it again. "You just hover the cursor at the top here and click on the arrow facing this direction and then type your response." "What if I click the arrow that goes in the other direction?" "Don't." "Right." She left and I stared at the screen, composed a response and a request before placing my two middle fingers over the keys. When I was finished, I called out again, "How do you send it?" There was another pause and then she appeared once more, walked to my side, and pushed my hands away. "See the little paper airplane up here in the left-hand corner? You just click on that and it sends the email." "Paper airplane, that's clever." She stared at me. "Left-click? Always left-click until otherwise notified." "Right." Ruby disappeared and I sent my email, feeling very proud of myself. "Hey, that wasn't so bad." There was a ding, and I looked at the screen. "I got another email!" There was no response, and I carefully left-clicked the box and was rewarded with a magnificent photo of my daughter and granddaughter sitting in the back of a hay wagon, Katie looking to the side with a striking profile and Lola looking straight at me with those deep-souled eyes. I remembered taking that photograph. Wow! Another face appeared at my doorway, and Sizer Vittoria glanced around. "Is it safe to come in?" "Safer than it is out there." I gestured toward the computer, my new pal. "Hey, I can do emails." "That's great, boss," he stepped in. "There's a bit of a problem."
"What?"
"Did you go off on some tirade about werewolves with John Rupert?"
"The TV idiot?"
"Yes."
"No.
I had a tirade on clinical lycanthropy, a condition John Rupert couldn't even pronounce, much less understand, but that was after they stopped filming."
"Evidently not, because it's being included in the episode they're airing tonight." "I said bullshit, and they said you can't say that on the air, so I assumed they'd stopped filming."
He sat in my guest chair. "Boss, when was the last time you checked the FCC rulings on profanity? 1964? I laced my fingers in my lap.
"I might be a little behind the times."
"You can now say the word shit on television.
Even broadcast television?"
"There is no more broadcast television, boss." I thought about the TV set back at my cabin that I hadn't turned on in a long while. I wondered why mine had stopped working. "Well, they've got you spouting off about the most detailed aspects of clinical lycanthropy. Did I say that right?"
"Yep."
"So they say there's some kind of cover-up going on with the sheriff's department."
"And what are they basing that on?"
"Your knowledge of clinical lycanthropy. Look, boss, I know you, so it doesn't seem strange to me, but most sheriffs wouldn't be able to tell you what clinical lycanthropy is if their lives depended on it." He looked out the window. "What do you want to do about it?"
"Nothing."
He turned back to me.
"Nothing?"
I shook my head. "Until Joe Mayer, the state attorney general, calls, there really isn't anything to do. They got me talking about a psychiatric condition that has nothing to do with the death of Miguel Hernandez, so if they want to air it, feel free."
"Okay," he shrugged. "Where are we on the Hernandez case, anyway?"
"Isaac found mule hair traces on his jeans, which explains how he got up high enough to hang himself."
"So he used a mule to commit suicide?"
"The mules were tied up when I found them at his camp."
"Oh.
The mules couldn't have tied themselves.
So it's a murder."
He stood to go. "Which is why you don't give a crap about this stupid werewolf story on cable television."
"Can you say the word crap on television?"
As he departed, he called back, "I'll check on that." Ruby took his place and held it posted out to me. Abarane Echepare called and said that his camp tender Jimenez was in town getting supplies
and that if he wanted to speak with him and not have to drive up the mountain or out to the ranch, it might be a good time to catch him.
How was Abe's English?
Exemplary. I took the piece of paper with the camp tender's cell number.
Did he say anything about his son-in-law?
No, why?
I met him at the Maverick station on the way out of town late last night, and he said he was on his way there to collect his son. I just thought he might have mentioned it. We don't have enough to do besides keeping tabs on the familial affairs of the Rhoda Echepare family.
Hey, Ruby, could you come here?
I gestured toward the photo on my screen.
How do I make that my screensaver?
She reached across, manipulating the mouse thingamajig and left-clicking the living daylights out of it as two of the most important things in my life expanded on the screen.
How do you want to set the sleep settings?
I don't know.
When do you want the photo to go away?
I glanced at the two faces, the one looking back at me. Never. I always loved the old settings for your table sign that had stood on the roadway outside the IGA since I was a kid. The giant crossed spoon and fork made shade for Dog, who was always happy to go to the grocery store because, as far as he knew, that's where they keep all the ham. I'd called the number on the phone and left a message for Jimenez. He went straight to voicemail, so I figured he hadn't gotten in range just yet. My supposition was confirmed when I saw an elderly Hispanic man in a do-rag wheeling into the IGA parking lot, probably talking to Ruby back at the office on his phone. I walked toward him as he finished the call. He looked to be about 1,000 years old, with wrinkles on his wrinkles, but handsome nonetheless, even with a prodigious and colorful black eye.
Howdy.
He cracked open the door of the early 80s Dodge D-100 with more rust holes than body.
Hola, hola, Sheriff. How you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Okay.
He shut the door behind him and smiled, the striking set of what I assumed were dentures sparkling white in the sunshine. He shook my hand like an irrigation pump.
More work these days, but work is good.
Agreed. I spotted a bench on the sidewalk in front of the grocery store, where we might be able to talk without being overheard. Let's have a seat over here. The small man followed, and we sat.
Plenty of snow still up on the mountain, and I'm thinking that we will have good spring.
I unzipped my jacket and nudged my hat back. We already are.
You know, see.
Seen any wolves up on the mountain?
He shook his head. No, I don't see no wolves.
He smiled again.
You sure you see one and not some dog?
Yep, I saw one, but only one. Having passed the pleasantries, I got down to business. You mind if I ask you a few questions about Miguel Hernandez? He nodded.
How well did you know him?
Not too well.
He worked for us a couple of years now.
What was he like?
Moody. He was a moody man. Read too many books.
Do you know if he had any problems here in town with anybody?
What kind of problem?
I don't know, arguments he might have had, fights or anything. He laughed, fingering the discolored swelling around his left eye.
He up on the mountain. Who are you going to argue with, the trees?
I heard he was in a fight at the Uscati bar in town.
I don't know nothing about that.
What about Abarani? Did he ever argue with him? He studied me.
They have arguments sometime.
Sure. About what?
Money, time, the sheep. Same stuff everybody argue about.
How big were the arguments? He shrugged, saying nothing. I was told recently that Abarani is a little tough on the hired hands.
Who tell you that?
I'm not at liberty to say at the moment. He stared at me some more.
I work for the man for 23 years now. You think I stay with him, he not good to me?
That's not what I asked, Mr. Jimenez. He huffed and puffed a bit.
Why you try to blame this on Mr. Echepare?
I'm not blaming anyone. But there's a man who's been killed, and I'm trying to find out who did that.
Not Abarani.
Then who? He stood, smoothing his wool bibs.
I don't talk to you no more.
Begging your pardon, Mr. Jimenez, but we can either have a nice chat here on this bench, out in this lovely spring air, or we can go over to my office. Either way, this conversation isn't over until I say it is. He stood there for a moment and then sat back down. He didn't say anything but crossed his tattooed arms and looked out into the parking lot.
Thank you.
I waited a moment and then continued. So, am I to understand that Abarane has a bit of a temper and has physically abused his hired help in the past? Begrudgingly, he responded,
Not like you talk.
Then what?
These men, the new ones, they no good. No good. They know what to work. We come there, and the camp all gone to hell, and sheep scattered all over the mountain. That no good.
You mean Miguel Hernandez? He gestured openly.
All of them.
Let's confine ourselves to Hernandez. Did you ever see him arguing with anybody besides Abe?
Yes. He argued with everyone. He'd rather argue than breathe.
He ever argue with you?
Yes.
About what? His head dropped, but then he looked away.
He sometimes stick his nose where it no belong.
Concerning? His eyes returned to mine.
Liberty to say.
I let that one sit for a spell. Is it true that he was hurting himself? Cutting his arms with a knife? He nodded his head and looked away.
Si.
Just one more question. He continued to study the parking lot as I leaned forward, examining his face. How did you get that black eye? If you can throw together a couple of sandwiches for me, too, that'd be great. Ronnie, the deli guy, started cutting the meat on the slicer and looked up at me.
Nobody cuts ham this thick, Sheriff.
He grinned.
What are you doing, feeding a wolf?
Watch what you're doing before you lose a thumb. He finished wrapping up the pound of ham and then went about making my sandwich.
Horseradish?
Absolutely. Knowing my habits, he reached back and grabbed a bag of salt and vinegar chips and an iced tea, depositing them in a white paper bag and then began making the next one.
Philly hoagie?
How did you guess? His chin pointed.
She's standing behind you.
I turned to find my undersheriff.
Howdy.
She cracked open a Diet Coke. I was sure she had purloined from the cooler.
Hey, any luck?
The camp tender said there was another herder up on the mountain range, Jacques Ariette, and that there had been some problems between Hernandez and Ariette and that I might want to go speak with him.
How do we find him?
I patted the breast pocket of my shirt. I have a map Jimenez drew for me. She sipped her soda.
So we're going on a picnic?
A jug of wine and thou. Ronnie nodded at Vic and held up some peppers.
Hot and sweet?
Yeah, just like me. She leaned against the glass and looked up.
Anything else?
Jimenez was sporting a beauty of a black eye.
That's a camp tender, right?
Yep.
Who clipped him?
He kind of intimated it was the other herder, Ariette.
Basque?
French Basque. The genuine article. Think we should get Sancho to go with or instead of us? She made a face.
What does he get to do all the cool stuff? Besides, he's got an abandoned vehicle, a lost dog, and somebody stole one of the Clear Creek Trail signs.
Spring is officially upon us. Ronnie winked at Vic and then handed me the entirety.
You can pay here, save your time at the checkout line.
Deal. I handed him some bills, took my change, and we started out through the automatic doors. Figuring that since I had a dog, we'd travel in my truck, I made my way and climbed in as the beast gave up riding shotgun and jumped onto the back seat. Vic climbed in and buckled up.
Where's the infamous shotgun?
I gave it to Jimenez to give back to Abarane since Lucien didn't want it.
She nodded. So, what's the story on all the animosity between cattlemen and sheepmen?
I started my truck and backed out, took a right, and headed out of town.
Transhumans. Is that some kind of LGBTQ thing?
I don't think so. Settling in, we raced across the foothills and then began the long climb, crisscrossing the canyon that leads to the high country. It's a type of herding that goes back to the old world methods of pastoral migration, moving large herds of sheep from the lowland plains to the mountains where there's enough grass to fatten the herds.
So what was the problem?
I gestured out the window. It's not easy to explain, but private land ownership and fences to make it simple. The old style called for vast areas where sometimes thousands of sheep grazed across the checkerboard of public and private land. There was always, and maybe still is, competition between the cattlemen and the sheep owners for that grass. You add the homesteaders into the pot, and you historically get trouble.
So it was all about grass?
Some.
but I suspect there was a little more to it than that.
What?
Bigotry. Most cattlemen and cowboys were white, while most shepherds were Hispanic, Mexican, Native, or Basque. The cattlemen looked down on the sheepmen. They saw them as meek individuals who didn't have the gumption to seek independence like the cowboys had. And both cattlemen and sheepmen looked down on the homesteaders.
That's stupid.
I'm not saying it wasn't. But you have to remember that period of the American West was a time of great racial identification and suspicion of different peoples.
Was it really violent?
In 1903, the sheep shooters, a group of anti-sheep cattlemen, tallied between 8,000 and 10,000 sheep killed in the open range. Hell, hooded riders used clubs to kill thousands of them here in Wyoming and Montana.
When did all that foolishness stop?
World War I, when we all got the Germans as a mutual enemy. It's still a difficult business to be in. The sheep industry has bottomed out in many ways. There are fewer sheep in this country than there were 200 years ago, and only a tenth of the number that there were in the 40s. There are now a little over 5 million sheep, mostly located on land that can't support cows.
Who has the most sheep?
China, with about 140 million.
How come we're not getting shepherds from China?
Good question.
She sat up as I turned right onto the gravel roadway. Where exactly are we going?
The road at Hunter Corral and the access path on the other side of Paradise Guest Ranch.
So, the other side of Paradise.
She lodged her boots on the dash, as she always did.
Sounds good to me.
Clay Miller, the head ramrod at Paradise Guest Ranch, said we were free to use their road to the park, where Echeparre had one of his herds, and he even invited us to lunch. I had held up my white paper bag. He cocked his stained cowboy hat back on his head and nodded.
Our head's up in that North Park section, but he comes in here every week or so.
For what?
Wine. He's French, after all.
I nodded and started my truck as Clay squinted an eye at me.
So what are we doing about this wolf problem?
Playing into the old joke, I made something up. I think the game and fish are capturing them, neutering them, and then releasing them.
They do understand that the problem is the wolves eating the sheep and not screwing them, right?
Have a nice day, Clay. Laughing, he pulled back from my window and waved us through the open gate.
Don't get bit!
Bouncing along the dirt road, we entered the tree line and watched as the forest closed around us. There was a small amount of snow on the ground where the drifts had been, but it was obvious that winter was in recession, and before long the brimming reservoirs would be sending the life-giving water down the mountain to the pastures and irrigation ditches below.
I love it up here.
I turned to look at her.
Really? There aren't any people.
Oh.
I waited a moment before adding, you know, I have a cabin up here. She turned to look at me. What?
A private lease with the Forest Service that my family has had since 1904.
Where?
I gestured in a vague direction. Oh, back that way.
And you never told me about it?
Its formal name is Ranch 34 of the National Order of Cowboy Rangers, a fraternal order of cowboys that started up before the turn of the century, whose lodges were referred to as ranches, and the one here in Absaroka County was my family cabin, Ranch 34. Back before World War I, these groups were mostly organized to provide life insurance and burial rates, but the NOCR was infamous for one more thing.
What's that?
Stealing the body of William Frederick Cody, a.k.a. Buffalo Bill. She turned in the seat to stare at me.
What?
January 10th, 1917, Buffalo Bill Cody died of kidney failure in Denver, Colorado, and for 4 months lay in state until they could blast enough ground away to bury him at the top of Lookout Mountain, there near Denver. The American Legion and other groups in Wyoming responded by joining together in a reward for the return of the body to Cody, Wyoming, which resulted in the state of Colorado placing the body under armed guard until it could be interred under 4 feet of concrete in June of that same year.
So, Wyoming and Colorado fought over the body?
Yep. And this National Order of Cowboys and Indians, this time I said a little more forcibly, National Order of Cowboy Rangers.
They went down and tried to steal the body?
Yep.
But they didn't?
There's a lot of conjecture on that. But Buffalo Bill is buried on Lookout Mountain in Colorado, right? I drove along in a modicum of silence.
I don't know. Is he?
She continued to study me.
Oh, you fucker.
After a moment, she slumped back in her seat.
I want to see this cabin.
I nodded. If I can remember the combination. Then you can tell me the rest of the story. She pointed to the ridge in the wide meadow.
Sheep.
Sure enough, there was a broad band of off-white at the ridge, so I wheeled up the dirt road and slowly bumped our way to the location about a half-mile distant. The sheep wagon was backed into the trees at the very top of the ridge, which provided viewing access to both sides of the vast field of what would become green grass. Pulling my truck up a respectful distance, I parked and we both got out. I didn't see any dogs or livestock other than the sheep, so I allowed Dog the luxury of stretching all four of his legs. The beast jumped out and trotted toward the wagon, choosing a chopped wheel to lift a leg. There were about 100 head milling about, looking for new grass and bathing in the warmth of the spring sun, as I knocked on the door of the wagon. Jacques Ariette, are you home? There was no response. Walking around the wagon, I could see where a horse or mule had been tied up in the shade, but the water bucket was still half full, and the stake line hung limp to the ground. He must be out on his mount.
Rounding up wine?
Maybe. I looked around, but couldn't see any sign of the man. I smiled. I guess we could have called ahead.
Uh-huh.
She knocked on the door again.
You think he hung himself, too?
I hope not. And just for the record, I don't think Miguel Hernandez hung himself either. Glancing toward a copse of aspens near the wagon, I walked over and ran my hand over the trunks, studying the signs and images that had been freshly carved in the tender bark.
And this breakthrough in the big case is based on what?
Pulling out a small notepad from my jacket, I drew a pencil from my pocket and quickly sketched the images as best I could. Mule hair on the inside of Hernandez's pants. That means somebody could have used a mule to hang him. I continued to study the symbols, and the mules were tied up when we found his camp.
Holy shit, you're right.
I guess I'd be more worried if this Jacques guy's mule or horse were here. Folding her arms, she leaned against the wagon.
Walt, why the hell would someone be running around killing shepherds?
I took in the entire area, but could see no sign of Ariette. Finally, folding my field notepad closed, I turned to look at her. I wish I knew. The place hadn't changed much since the last time I'd seen it, almost 15 years ago. Some of the footers on the front porch were starting to rot along with the exposed rafter ends and the purlins. The old asphalt roof was missing a few tiles, but the tar paper underneath appeared to be holding up, at least until I could get inside. Feeling along the top of the door frame, I finally found the old commercial-style key. I turned to see Vic leaning against the railing, looking through the grove of quaking aspens to the beaver pond below.
This is beautiful.
Not bad, huh?
Why do you never come up here?
I looked around, taking a deep breath and slowly letting it out. Strong associations with my grandfather. I turned back toward the door, hoping that Tom Groenberg, the manager of my familial properties, hadn't changed the lock. Luckily, the key turned like I'd been here only days before. Standing there in the doorway, I inhaled the old air that my grandfather had at one time exhaled, and my feet felt frozen to the porch.
You all right?
I glanced inside. Yep. I took a step. The place looked exactly as I remembered. The room was dominated by an old moss rock fireplace, barrister bookcases, and old mission furniture. From where I stood, I could see the massive moose mount on the far wall and the old Navajo rug that covered the floor with a weathered leather sofa stretched across the room.
Hey.
I turned and looked down at her.
We don't have to go in here if you don't want to.
Turning back, I could see the opening that led to the bedroom and the string of black and white photographs that I knew by heart on the log wall, the closest one of my mother and father standing down near the pond, maybe 60 yards away. There was a noise, a persistent noise that came rushing at me, and all I could do was stand there and listen as it grew louder. It was like something was calling out to me from a long time ago, something that had to be answered now. Opening my mouth, I could feel a constriction in my chest and couldn't seem to speak as I turned toward Vic again, who stood just a little away, talking on her cell phone. A miracle in itself that there was service. It took a minute, but I caught my breath and smiled as she hung up and turned to look at me.
That abandoned vehicle Sancho was going to check on? Well, it belongs to that guy you met the other night.
Which guy?
Abirani Echepare's son-in-law. Donny Lott.
Chapter 9. Did you check the room?
No.
I talked to the woman at the front desk who reported the car and then came up here and knocked on the door, but nobody answered. Putting the magnetic card from the paper sleeve, I held it in my hand as I rapped on the wooden surface of room 214.
Mr. Lott, it's Walt Longmire, the sheriff.
There was no answer, so I knocked again.
Mr. Lott?
I slipped the card through the lock mechanism and pushed the door open wide. The room was clean, but he'd been here. The bed had been slept in, and there was a sports duffel sitting on a chair, a laptop on the desk nearby. Taking a few steps farther, I walked into the bathroom and could see that his personal items and a dop kit were on the shelf above the sink. He'd taken a shower, a damp towel still hanging over the edge of the tub. Turning around, I